Southeast Radio's Business Matters with Carl Fitzpatrick.
Well, over the past few weeks, we've been looking at different forms of modern media, but how are some of these modern media companies approaching sales in what is a crowded advertising market? Kelly Barber from Digiday has been examining some global trends in this area, and she joins us now from New York to share these insights with us this morning. Kelly, start by providing us with an insight into Digiday.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. So we cover the business of media and marketing. So it's a little bit of a meta digital publication. A media company covering the business of media basically allows me to report on different revenue diversification strategies that media companies are undergoing, the state of the ad market, changes to privacy laws, all that fun stuff. So I report on basically the business of media.
Now, you recently wrote an article about how modern media companies are changing their approach to sales. Has volatility within a competitive advertising space prompted the need to change?
Yeah, very much so. So that story that you're referencing really looked at the ways in which sales team operations have changed over the past, maybe recently past two or so years, but it's kind of been this ongoing shift as digital media has become predominant and traditional media and traditional media selling practices have kind of fallen off in their effectiveness. And so that piece really kind of looks at the ways in which publishers have needed to, one, try to compete with the scale that social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram or search platforms like Google can offer advertisers. And largely by doing that, they're changing the way their sales teams are structured to not just focus on selling one title like a magazine brand or a niche within their overall portfolio, but really selling across their entire offerings. To your point, very much in response to the fact that media dollars are not easy to come by. It's a very volatile market. The past couple of years have been very tumultuous in a lot of ways. Ad revenues down. Sales teams have had to get creative in how they're really responding to changes in media dollar flow.
So provide us with an insight into how Condé Nast have approached this.
Yeah, Condé Nast is a great example because they really did take that, brand focus and switch it to more of an advertiser focus in how their sales team is organized. And so they started in the U.S. maybe 5 or 6 years ago. They started by moving from having their sales operations or their sales team members being focused on a brand like Vanity Fair or Vogue or The New Yorker, and they switched them to being focused on an advertising category like technology or beauty or fashion. And what that did is instead of having one individual selling, Vogue from everything from, their magazine print products to Met Gala sponsorship to, digital ads, they now have a seller that's focused specifically on luxury, right, as a category. And they're able to sell Met Gala in addition to the New Yorker Festival. They're able to sell, maybe a technology-forward fashion company in Wired. They're able to go really across the portfolio and offer a lot more scale to whatever advertiser is coming in with a proposal. I talked to Condé Nast about how they were changing their Europe division to also have this very categorical focus in how their sellers are approaching their, clientele. So they were making that shift in their international operations after seeing that it works so well in the U.S.
And to implement such a strategy, what type of retraining was required of their sales teams?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's when I was talking to Condé Nast about this, and again, this happens at other publishers, but just using Condé Nast as that example, what they've had to do is kind of figure out where the sellers already have strengths, right? So if they have a really strong connection with one client or a really good relationship, they want to preserve that. So they're going to find the ways in which the seller is already leaning into a categorical strength and letting them kind of invest more into learning about that area, learning about that client and the needs of that category, and also finding ways in which they're not losing business, they're not losing clients, they're not losing the prospective commissions that they had, and making sure that they understand how they're able to further develop this categorical expertise. And so another publisher, like Forbes, for example, they also kind of underwent this change. And what they were doing is also working alongside the Forbes Insights team, so the team that's responsible for research and data, and using the insights that they get from there about, you know, trending topics or what's top of mind for executives who are in these categories to inform the sellers, who then become experts in what this category is looking to achieve, either in their thought leadership or in their advertising, you know, strategies, and trying to be problem solvers for them too.
Have you also seen examples where some of these digital publishers have also taken on new salespeople with industry-specific expertise in order to be more effective?
Yeah, I think that that is always going to be a priority when hiring at this point, finding someone who has experience selling either in a specific category that you want to expand into. A lot of publishers at this point are trying to look outside of their traditional categories to operate in new spaces that maybe they weren't previously getting ad dollars from, and finding ways to be applicable there. So I do think that is a big consideration when they're hiring externally, maybe someone who can bring a new subset of clientele into the business, someone who has pre-existing relationships in a category that they weren't already operating in. I think that's definitely a focus. I would also say that I think there's a shift in looking for people who have expertise in different mediums as well. So some publishers are adding more events, businesses, and or events into their revenue mixes. Finding someone who has experience selling events is going to be top of mind. Same thing goes with podcasting. Someone who has experience selling audio inventory is going to be an asset to a team. So I definitely think that they are looking for these skill sets or looking for some degree of diversification in what their sales team is able to contribute to the overall revenue growth, because at the end of the day, diversifying revenue is so much top of mind. It's how you can do it, whether that's adding a new business altogether or just finding a way to expand your advertising business as it is.
And Kaylee, how are media companies using generative AI to streamline their sales processes?
So that's a really fascinating story I've been following. I think it's happening more and more frequently, or at least the tests are. But basically, sales teams will implement, you know, generative AI in their sales operations, everything from summarizing an RFP or a request for a proposal from an advertiser, and saving upwards of like 2 hours of work by doing that. So they'll run an RFP through a, you know, chat bot or a GPT, as they're sometimes called, and that'll spit out this summarization of what a client is looking for. And obviously they'll, you know, go back and skim over the RFP to make sure nothing's missing, but not having to write up the summarization themselves saves so much time, based on what I've heard from publisher conversations, that they're able to reallocate that time to other things, whether that's, you know, spending more time thinking about the creative responses to these proposals, or trying to reach out to new clients and widening the net of people that they're able to make contact with over the course of a week.
And what benefits has BuzzFeed enjoyed by using AI?
They've created these pilots that are proprietary for themselves. So they're not going through a large, you know, AI tool like ChatGPT. They're creating these individual GPTs that are unique to them, that are private to them, so that they can upload their client information safely, and so that information doesn't end up getting fed back into the large language models that you know, any person has access to through the general ChatGPT. They're doing these privately so that that information stays proprietary to them and to their clients. They don't have these concerns about privacy, but they've been able to invest in this technology, streamline their services, streamline their operations, and hopefully turn that into more revenue through more business.
And Kaylee, one media company enjoyed huge growth last year by integrating its branded content studio with its sales department.
I can't name the actual publisher that was telling me about this, because they told me about this in confidence. However, it is, you know, a US-based magazine that basically looked internally into their like entire ad operations, found that there were opportunities to rely on the expertise of their branded content writers and incorporate them in the process of creating proposals to respond to RFPs from advertisers, basically making those proposals stand out amongst all of the responses that advertisers would be getting. And so they were looking for ways to really lean on that internal talent that they already had and not make sales, you know, sellers themselves spend extra time, you know, working on these responses when their natural skill set isn't inclined to writing. It's, you know, to making relationships, making connections. So yeah, instead of having their sales teams spend, you know, all their time working on these responses, they relied on their in-house talent, and that's been able to, again, really make them stand out to the advertiser and translate that into more business.
And are incentives still a driving force for modern media companies to increase sales?
Yeah, incentives are an interesting concept, and I think that they've, you know, taken place in various ways at media companies. But what was interesting is that same publisher that I was just talking about, they also incentivized their sellers to focus on high-margin ad products, meaning not events, which have a very kind of low margin of profit because there's so much overhead associated with events. They focused on things like digital media assets or even print ads that are going to have a lower overhead cost, and therefore they're going to take home a higher percentage of revenue from selling those assets. And they were incentivizing their sellers to really focus on those, you know, better margins in order to make sure that they save more money. And so they would turn some of those added revenue dollars into bonuses for the sellers. And that was an interesting concept because if you talk to other publishers, right now they're looking at the big splashy things like events and video production that advertisers seem to be wanting.
Well, if you've just tuned in, that was Kayleigh Barber from Digiday, and these trends could certainly be of interest to both media companies and businesses across other sectors alike.
Southeast Radio's Business Matters with Carl Fitzpatrick.